Mr. Chair, I have Senate File 1323. We're working off a Senate file, and the amendment, the A9 amendment you have, was actually put on an environmental finance, and I understand it didn't get engrossed, so, but there's nothing that's changed with it. So we could work off of that, if that's all right.
Yeah, we'll work off the bill as you would like to have it ultimately presented.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Member, Senate File 1323 has to do with the safe disposal of what are called sharps. These are devices that inject something into you or are injected subcutaneously in order to get a blood sample and things like that. Because our medical technology is so good now, it's very common now for people to be able to inject things for diabetes and other kinds of medications at home. The problem is, despite the fact that healthcare facilities have provided for the safe disposal of these sharps in rigid containers through medical waste disposal companies, when people have these at home, they often just throw them in the garbage, and when they're on the road, people often dispose of them in places where workers in the health or in the sanitation area, as well as the hospitality industry, come in contact with them and sustain a needle stick injury. And this is actually one of the most dangerous parts of the jobs. If you work at a landfill or drive a garbage truck, or if you're cleaning hotel rooms or cleaning out airplane cleaning out airplanes. So what the bill does, and this has gone through many different iterations, Mr. Chair, but after talking with folks from Life Science Alley, from pharma, from the waste industry, and syringe manufacturers, there are some national dialogues that have gone on this issue, and they haven't really come to any fruition on how to organize and finance a safe collection of sharps so they don't injure people. But what we have come up with is a good first step. I don't know if we're stepping in the right direction or falling in the right direction, but the idea is that we're asking the manufacturers of pharmaceuticals which are injected into the human body at home and those who make the devices that inject you at home exercise some stewardship and educate consumers on their websites on how to safely dispose of the sharps. So it doesn't have any other mandates other than just saying, please post on your website how it is that you're letting consumers know how to get rid of this material. It's not as robust as I probably would like it, but as I say, it's been a good coalescing exercise to get a lot of the stakeholders to start talking to each other. We have people who can answer some technical questions on that, but it was pretty simple in environmental finance, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gardner, was a fiscal note requested on this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, thank you for reminding me. There was some language that asked the Pollution Control Agency to do something, and therefore that's why I asked that it be sent to Environmental Finance, and I took that language out, so Environmental Finance, so it's here without anything that has a fiscal note. So, in fact, there's no fiscal impact at this point, but it had to come here before it could get to the floor.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Skins, was that... Okay, seeing no additional questions, then we're getting close. I think we're one away. So hopefully we'll be taking action shortly. Representative Rukavina. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one final question. It dawns upon me that without a fiscal note, that seems to be solely a policy bill. Representative Gardner, have you talked to the policy chair about this bill not coming through the policy committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, are you referring to the... Well, it has gone through environmental policy and health policy as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Oh, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. I actually carried and passed the first bill that talked about disposal of sharps, and just as a comment, I learned about the subject by going to... I can't remember now if it's an NCSL or a CSB meeting, but it talks about the effect of eliminating travel from all people might have on people learning different things.
Okay. Representative Gardner, with those last couple of questions, we now have a quorum. So I'll officially convene the meeting. And Representative Wagenius, would you care to move the division report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would. I move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for Senate File 1323, the second unofficial engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Wagenius?
I move Senate File 1323, second unofficial engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed in the general register.
Okay, that motion is before us, and then we need to add the A9 amendment. So Representative Wagenius would...
Yes, I would move the A9 amendment.
Okay, the motion is to adopt the A9 amendment, and this amendment was explained, essentially it became the bill, I guess, is what best
That's correct.
Way to describe it. So any discussion on the A9 amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Wagenius renews her motion that Senate File 1323, the second unofficial engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We have the minutes. Representative Benson?
Mr. Chair, I move the April 14th, 2010 amendment. Minutes.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I move the Energy Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3033, First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us to adopt the report. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is a bill about...
You want to move the bill?
I'll move the bill. Yeah. Move House File 3033 be recommended to pass and move to the floor, Mr. Chair.
It goes to...
wherever it goes.
Ways and Means.
It's fine with me.
Okay. Representative Rukavina moves House File 3033 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is a bill that kind of goes with what I believe in about making things in this state and country again, and it uses the Renewable Energy Fund to give an incentive for homeowners and small business people to put solar panels, photovoltaic cells that feed back into the grid or are capable of doing that. And, you know, we've got a lot of money coming into that fund. It uses $2 million, I believe, this year or next year, then $4 million of the $19 million coming in a year after that, and then $5 out of the $23 million that should be coming in the third year out. And members, you know, that fund has been used for a lot of good research, but I think it's time now. We have the research to do this, and the ability to have these homeowners and businesses get a payback under this bill in about 6 years, and at the same time fixing up the environment. I've worked with Excel on this, so they're satisfied with it. They also have a very lucrative program for the homeowner, and we've limited the size to 40 kilowatts. I've worked it out with the current solar manufacturers in the state of Minnesota that are located here, and so members, I'd appreciate your support. I think it's a very good bill and a good way to use that fund.
Okay, Representative Rukavina, you had an amendment, an author's amendment A4.
Yeah, I guess I got to let the Department of Energy get some money to pay for it. So.
Okay, so Representative Rukavina moves the A4 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, do you have any information on how much higher rates will be paid by the consumers if this bill is enacted into law?
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, that money's already been put into this fund under current law from the Prairie Island, although Representative Hilty just made sure and clarified his intent of the cask storage, and so now they'll be paying I'll let Representative Hilty explain that, but the money already is going into a fund that's been there for years. Representative Biskins have been used for a lot of things that, you know, you and I might think should move along a little faster, and that's what this bill is intending to do, jump from the basic research to the doing it.
Representative Biskins? In fact, two of us on this committee were on that conference committee that established that fund, Representative Hausman and myself. So you're
I hope you like, this. Mr. Chair, what I'm doing then, and you and Representative Hausman agree that sometime you got to pull the trigger.
The bill is before the committee.
And then maybe I'll get some jobs in my district, too. Thank you very much.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Heckbart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Rukavina. I know that wasn't something that you asked for on your bill or wanted on your bill necessarily, but Representative Hilty did put an amendment on your bill in his committee that does increase the amount that XL Energy and the XL Energy customers are going to be paying once they reach this certain threshold with these caps. And that's going to be an increased rate to the tax or to the ratepayers for them to pay that. Right now, they're paying $19 million a year just to have the right to have these caps. And now Representative Hilty increased that, and it's going to be much, much more once they start putting more caps out there. So I just want everybody on this committee to know that if you have XL ratepayers, your rates are going to their rates are going to go up once this kicks in.
Well, Mr. Chair, undeniably that's the case with the Hilty amendment. But Representative Hackbarth, you know, all of us have to think that was an agreement made a long time ago, so those casks would be stored there, and that was a deal that was cut, and this is, I think, just a clarification of that, because there's going to be other casks coming from Monticello, if I'm not mistaken. But also, you know, your governor passed the 25 and 20, and I don't know if you voted for it or not, but, you know, this is a way to try to get us there with money that's already coming into the state, and the ratepayers are paying it, and you're right, and they should get something out of it. And bringing a payback in these types of panels from like 20 years down to 6 is what we should be doing. We can feed the grid. And in Washington, when they've done this, they've jumped up. Minnesota has 1 megawatt statewide of these photovoltaic cells. In Washington, when they did a similar program, they're up to 4. So, you know, I know the ratepayer's going to pay, but the ratepayer is paying now, and the ratepayer is paying for a lot of research that could jump to applied research and make jobs and clean up the environment and use the money correctly. And I hope you change your mind and vote for this. Come on, Hackbarth. You know you want to do it.
Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, you know, I probably would have voted for your bill if that amendment hadn't gone on. Probably would have. But this is going to be a huge rate increase to the tax the ratepayers for XL Energy. There's no two ways about it. And that was not part of the deal when that deal was made, for this to increase that much. It was not. And also, I know what the loss is, and I know that we can use this statewide for different things, but, you know.
I'm not in this bill. This is just confined to the Excel area, and believe me, you know, wish it was
and
statewide,
okay.
But I did that for you, and so you should turn around and give me a little support.
I like the concept of supporting Minnesota companies. That's great, and jobs for Minnesota. That's all wonderful. But then again, on the other hand, these solar energy projects are hugely subsidized. They don't pay for themselves. I mean, I know it's green energy, et cetera, et cetera. But it's probably the worst form of green energy that you can probably promote is solar energy in the state of Minnesota. Although it is a Minnesota company, we're going to have solar energy. We might as well be using solar panels made in Minnesota, all of that. But still, it's the least effective green energy that you can possibly buy.
Okay, Representative Biskins.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so Representative Rukavina, maybe I didn't ask the question quite right. In listening to Representative Hackbarth, you answered my question fairly and correctly. I believe that currently there would be no increase to the ratepayers, but so I guess I faultily assumed that there wouldn't be in the future as well. So there is no cap on how much the XL will have to pay into this program. It increases as the CAS increase. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill can explain a little more, but that's my understanding. And I know, like, right now there's, I think, $19 million coming into the fund because there may be less. I might not be correct about that, but there will be. And in like the third year out with this, there will be like $23 million coming in. So there's the dollar amount for the casks hasn't increased. It's just that because of whatever is happening in Monticello, and Representative Hilty knows better than me, so I'll let him answer the rest of your question.
Representative Hill, Mr. Chair, can we ask
Representative
Mr. Chair, is it okay if Representative Hilty does address that issue?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, do you have a specific question?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, when I had asked the Representative Rukavina what would be the increased cost to the ratepayers, he says there would be none, and I think he answered with integrity because in the short term there would be none. I assumed that over the long run there would be none as well, but it's now my understanding from the questioning of, by Representative Hackbarth that in the long term, once X number of casts have been, we've gone over X number of casts, now there would be costs to the ratepayers. Is that correct? Because of this bill?
Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, presuming that that XL is able to get cost recovery for the storage fee, there would be.
Okay.
Currently, I believe there are 29 casks at Prairie Island, and my understanding is that, and since we, as the chair pointed out, we have a couple of members on the committee from the original conference, they can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the $16 million that has been paid into the Renewable Development Fund from the Prairie Island portion of the storage fees was based on the presumption that there was a cap of 32 casks stored at Prairie Island, which meant that even though that cap had not yet been reached, the fee for the last 16 years has been $500,000 per cask allowed. That was my understanding of the agreement. I think at the time the agreement was reached, it was not anticipated that that limit would be exceeded. When the question of cask storage at Monticello arose as well, since the casks there are storing a lesser amount of spent fuel, the agreement reached with XL and the fee imposed by the legislature was $350,000 per cask. There's no cap on that. And I think that the amendment that we're referring to in the Rukavina bill is consistent with the intent of the legislature in the first place. And as I'm sure you're aware, advocates for the increased reliance on nuclear power consistently make the argument that the storage question is about to be resolved. And if it is resolved, there would be no increase at all. In fact, the whole question would disappear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if I may ask Representative Hilty to yield for a question on the topic of the solar energy. I understand that it's for photovoltaic modules, projects generating a capacity up to 40 kilowatts, is that right? Is this
solar energy, let's call it that, is that to be used, you know, by the consumer directly, or will it feed back into the power grid?
Mr. Chair, I think I can answer that.
Representative Rukavina.
It can do both. So, you know, in a typical house uses 4 kilowatts from what I understand. So, you know, the limit is 10 times that. So you could have a small business, a hardware store or something like that, get the whole rebate up to that dollar amount.
Representative Shemininsky. Yeah.
And Representative Rukavina, if I could continue on that question. Will the utilities buy it back at the wholesale power rate or at the retail rate?
There's a formula already, Mr. Chair, in law, Representative Shemansky. I think, I don't know what it is. It's the rate that they buy at.
Okay. All right.
On that point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shemansky, the Rukavina bill is consistent with the policies that are already in place in the state. We do have a rebate program. Projects less than 40 kilowatts are subject to net metering, so that the utility does buy back any excess production at the same rate that they charge the consumer. What this bill does simply is add an additional rebate for consumers that use this program but choose to buy panels that are manufactured in Minnesota. Otherwise, it doesn't do anything to change the program that's already in place.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question has to do with the rebates, Representative Rukavina. And I've read this back and forth, and it seems as though the credit is based, or the rebate is based upon the installation or the size of the installation. Generally, you would see, you know, what is the actual, I mean, what we really want here is efficiency. We if you're going to be green energy, you know, installing it is one thing, making it be effective, be efficient and effective for its cost seems to be another thing. But this looks to be just based upon just pure installation. And if it didn't generate one iota of energy, you could still get the rebate. That's what I'm reading here. Is that correct, or am I just reading that wrong? Is it based upon installation, or is it based upon generation, watts of generation?
Well, it's based if you install it. You don't know how it's going to perform, or, you know, that. But I don't know. I guess I'll ask somebody. Oh, is there an Excel guy, huh? Yeah. Yeah, it's based on putting it in, and you get the rebate. And you have to put it in to make it work, obviously, for it to be approved. So, I mean, it's going to perform. That's what the whole object of the program is. If you're uncomfortable with the wording, Representative Kiffmeyer, to clarify again, of course, we want it to be able to feed the system. That's the whole, or feed their own homes. That's the whole purpose of the program.
Representative Hilty on that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, this is consistent with the program as it currently functions. As I explained to Representative Shemansky, what the Rukavina bill does is simply add an additional rebate based on the consumer's choice to use panels that are manufactured in Minnesota. I believe I'm correct in saying that to be eligible for the rebate anywhere, and there are rebates that come from the state energy program as well as from the local utilities, the system has to be completed. It has to be done by a certified installer. You have to go through an application process, and the system has to be up and running and demonstrated to be functional before you're eligible for the rebate.
Mr. Chairman and members, that probably the biggest thing is that when I think of recently and some of the rebates for, you had to have Energy Star compliance and it had to be a certain rate of efficiency in order to get the rebate. And there are just some other things like that. And I was just noticing, because we had just recently gone through this on the federal and doing taxes and stuff, that it seemed like that this was just so much based upon its installation. It didn't have a connection to that. And so it's just a question I have. I'm not on the Energy Committee, so I haven't seen the bill before or heard that testimony. So just questions I have here, because I don't want to have, I think the whole point of green energy is, again, to make it efficient and useful and not just to, I mean, it takes things to, takes minerals, it takes supplies, it takes other things just to get the thing. I mean, it's and then afterwards, at some point, it'll have to be disposed of. So we don't want to just put things in place and rebate them and give a big incentive to do it without the consideration of the actual energy that's generated and also that it has worked and that it's effective. I mean, that's kind of the point. So I don't quite see that kind of language here as I have seen in other rebate energy programs. And you're right, Representative Hilty, maybe this is modeled on something in the past or current, but I think you're here to do things better, not just to model that on the past.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Hilty explained it well. I'm not doing anything different than the program that's already in place currently, other than to give another approximately $2.75 rebate per watt. And so nothing's different in this bill at all, other than that we've reached an agreement to use the money the ratepayer is already paying to pay into the fund to jump to the next step to do what we're supposed to do and to create jobs here in Minnesota in the process. There's nothing more to this bill than that. Xcel's not going to agree to something. Believe me, I'm not their favorite legislator. I think they kind of like me. I don't know. But they're not going to agree to a program that doesn't work for them. And again, I'll just emphasize to the committee, I don't know how many people on this committee voted against the 25 and 20. I think most of them did that were here. I know the governor pushed it. Maybe you didn't, Representative Kiffmeyer. But to get there, we got to do start doing things like this.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we underestimate the power of good technology and our regular citizens out there that happen to do these things because they work, because they are efficient, because they do something better. And we have people out there who are very interested in doing things in a green way. And as those kinds of folks who for many, many, many years when it wasn't popular did composting and did things efficiently in that way. I just get a little bit tired sometimes of the general public not treated as if they can't see something that's effective. Incenting them with a rebate, it's a great idea, but I especially on a temporary basis. But I just wanted to be sure that we were incenting efficiency as well.
Okay, Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Either to Representative Hilty or Representative Rukavina, what's the typical size of a solar photovoltaic generating? Let's say it's a residential or a small business. How many kilowatts could we anticipate?
Mr. Chair, I believe I said that already. I think the average home is 4, and this is 40, so it's 10 times more. So it could, you know, okay, maybe electrify a hardware store or a, you know, retail merchant of some kind.
Okay, Representative Rukavina, would that be 40 kilowatts or 4 kilowatts? Is, or
4 watts. 4 kilowatts, I think, for the average house, and 40 kilowatts is the cap on this program,
okay,
which would fire, you know, a right, bigger facility.
The reason I'm asking this question is on page 3, line 3.32, it's $5 per watt, if that's correct. So a 4-kilowatt installation would generate about a $20,000 rebate. Is that correct?
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Rupini, under,
or Representative Filthy,
under the current law, there is a program offered through the federal government where you get tax credits to the tune of about $240 a watt. Under a current program with Xcel, there is a $2.25 per watt rebate. The homeowner would pay about $240 of this, or about 30%. This new rebate would be about 22%. That's my understanding. There are other programs also that Representative Hilty referred to, I believe, at Commerce, but I'm not quite sure how that fits into the pie chart I have. But the installation cost net after you've gotten these rebates is about $8 a watt for it.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Hagbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, I wish Representative Biskins was still here because I think we need to elaborate a little bit more on Representative Hilke's amendment that he put on this bill. I heard him say that $500,000 per year per cast was the deal, but just so everybody knows, they've been paying $16 million a year, which is, they've got about 26 casts there now, and that's far more than $500,000 now that they've been paying for a long time. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Rukavina renews his motion that House File 3033, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, members.
You're welcome. And now we'll go to Senate File 2996. Representative Erdahl, see you present. Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Housing and Health Policy and Finance Division report for Senate File 2996, the first engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us to adopt the division report. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Benson.
I move Senate File 2996, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
And if you could explain the bill, and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Due to a recent change, all school concession stands are charged a separate fee. For example, in Eden Valley, Watkins, of the football field there, there's a concession stand at either end of the field, and they each have to pay a $150 fee. Under this bill, it would change it to a flat rate per school covering the food service in all stands if the school district is responsible. There are about 236 multiple concession stands in the state. The schools like it. This came to me from a superintendent. Consumers should like this. The health department has been consulted and are on board. There's a small cost, which actually is a savings to the schools of $35,000, and the health department has agreed to absorb that cost.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Benson renews his motion that Senate File 2996, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
House File 3414, Representative Hilty. And while Representative Hilty is coming forward, Representative Hilty moves the division report then for House File 3414, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3414, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Hilty on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what this bill does is provide for an additional $800,000 per year assessment authority for the Public Utilities Commission in order to address the staffing needs that I think have grown to the point of really being critical within the commission. A simple bill that no one has come forward to testify against. And although it does involve an assessment, I believe that the net result would be actual savings for the utilities that are being assessed, because the situation with the Public Utilities Commission currently is such that proceedings that should take weeks are taking months, and proceedings that should take months are in some cases taking years, and that is a costly situation for the utilities involved. So I think this is a bill that is supported by the utilities as well as the commission, and I would ask for member support.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Greffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hilty, is this the mutual fund tax?
No.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then. Representative Hackbert.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to point out that this is another one of those bills that we keep piling on and piling on and piling on. And it's another cost to the consumers for green energy mandates that in the state. And I just wanted to make people aware of what they're voting for. And it's going to cost more money to the ratepayers, more money, PUC, more money, et cetera. Just another additional cost.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Hilty renews his motion that House File 3414, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Hilty, 3757.
Mr. Chair, I move the Energy Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3757.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, before I make the next motion, my understanding that should this bill pass out of this committee, it has asked. The tax committee is asked to hear it. Would the motion be to send it to taxes and then to Ways and Means?
Yeah. Okay. That's. I was just double checking because I had had it as Ways and Means, but apparently taxes has requested it. Okay, Representative Hilty, that would be the.
So, motion. Mr. Chair, then I move that House File 3757 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay. The motion is before us. Representative Hilty on the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a bill that will be familiar to members of this committee. Was considered in this committee a few weeks ago in a somewhat in a slightly different form. The bill provides for an increase in the notice filing fee for mutual funds that are issued. Or proposed to be issued within the state. It's an increase in the fee from 1/20 of 1% to 1/10 of 1%, which is consistent with the fee charged in most other states in the nation. It does differ from that in that it's not capped. There are various practices in the states across the union, but basically what we're being asked here is whether we think it's reasonable to ask someone who proposes to invest, say, $10,000 in a mutual fund to pay an additional $5 in order to fill a very large hole that we have currently in the state grant program. It has been described by people from the industry that many of these mutual fund investors are in fact investing for their children's college education, and it seems to me somewhat consistent to ask people that are perceiving the value of a college education to make what amounts to a very minor contribution, $1 on $1,000, to help maintain the state grant program, which currently is in a $43 million deficiency.
Okay. Any discussion? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Representative Hilty, when I say this is other states, done by other states, well, doing this fee at this rate would make Minnesota one of the two highest in the country with Texas. Yes, there are other states who do this fee, but they cap it. And so it's not really, I mean, yes, other states do it at that rate, but they also cap it. And so that would make us a very expensive state to register mutual funds. So what's going to happen is they'll just go to these other states. And this is not a good pro-business in Minnesota way to go about things, as I understand this. Could you comment to those additional pieces of information?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I don't believe there's, I don't know who you're thinking would go to other states. The situation is that if you live in Minnesota and make this investment, presuming that the issuer or the broker passes the fee along to the investor, there isn't really any option. You would pay the fee. It's a fee that's charged to anyone that is a resident of Minnesota and is investing in securities that are described in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see that as good news. Well, it's okay. We don't have to worry about them leaving Minnesota. All the Minnesota people will just pay anyway because they have no choice. And so I think we're looking at something here that is going to be borne by our Minnesota people and increasing fees to them. And that, to me, does not make it okay in that regard. So I think, nonetheless, we also have a state law that says you can't charge a fee more than it costs to do it. It costs about $650,000. And this is going up to $23 million. It seems like quite a bit beyond what our own state law says we can do. You can't charge more than what it costs to do it. So it seems as though this is just a reason to, or a way to rob and to take a tax or raise a fee. And, you know, one of the things that is also of interest is that the fees that are being paid are of greater interest these days. The awareness of the fact that all these fees that come onto these mutual funds and get passed on to the people who buy these mutual funds or own them, that they're paying these fees, and it's an increasing issue of note. So I don't think it's a good idea, and I just really question whether going this far above what it costs to do it is even allowed by Minnesota law. I mean, this is huge. $650,000 to $23 million, that is huge, a huge big jump. I don't see you can justify the cost to run the program by jumping that high.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, the bill provides for an exemption so that it is not in conflict with, or it would not be in conflict with state law. And just let me say, earlier in this session, I had the opportunity to meet with a number of students from various higher education institutions across the state, a number of them my constituents, a number from elsewhere in the state. And what I was being told consistently is that our college students currently have virtually no prospect of graduating from college without massive student debt. Somebody is paying. The question, I guess, is whether it's reasonable to ask somebody who has, say, $10,000 to invest and is going to be paying a brokerage fee that amounts to somewhere between $500 and $550 to throw in an extra $5, or whether we think that the college students who are incurring massive I think, totally unreasonable amounts of debt in order to get an education should be paying that instead. That's what it comes to. I think basically it's kind of a philosophical difference, and obviously we're on different sides of that question. But in my view, that's really what it comes to.
I've got a question of the Higher Education Services Office, if they could come forward. I know, Representative Hilty, you used the number, the shortfall is $43 million. And my question, welcome, Ms. Grimes, is could you give us a snapshot of what that $43 million means for the average student in terms of what their grant would be prorated, in other words, reduced, as a result of that shortfall, so we can kind of get it down so that we understand what that impact is.
Mr. Chairman, Tricia Grimes from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. The $42 million shortfall in the state grant program, actually after the passage of House Bill 1671, the budget reduction bill, there were some changes made, so the shortfall is really now about $35 million. And on average, that means a reduction of about $300 in the average state grant. Instead of being $1,700 a year on average, they would be about $1,400.
And some students might lose on the high end is how much? That, and when I ask an average, that's one snapshot.
Right. Mr. Chair, students going to the institutions with higher tuition would lose on the order of about $1,000.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, just in response to some of the comments Representative Kithmeyer was making, I do want to, for the committee to know, and I know Representative Hilty knows this, that's part of the reason I requested this bill, and taxes will hear it. You know, it is raising revenue, and I felt these should go to taxes. But I just want, for the record, people to understand the question of a cap, as was mentioned in Representative Kithmeyer's comments, that other states have caps. It's our governor, Governor Pawlenty, who proposed lifting the cap. And so there's a lot going on here in this bill with the fee plus the cap, and I think we're going to need to have the commissioner on behalf of the governor weigh in on this a little bit, because the governor has kind of been of two minds on this issue as he proposed lifting the cap completely in Minnesota. So I think it'll be a good discussion for the tax committee. I think that's where we need to get it to, so we can get the Department of Revenue involved in this issue.
And Representative Groffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hilty, first of all, let me thank you for proving me right. Ever since I started saving for my retirement, I have always made the investment decision to invest in deductible IRA contributions and in 401ks versus a Roth IRA. And for those who don't know, the thinking is that if you put your money into a deductible IRA, you take the deduction now, whereas if you put it into a Roth IRA, when you cash it out in the future, you can take it out tax-free. And the reason why I've done this is I have said there is no way that elected officials 10, 15 years from now, when faced with a fiscal crisis, are going to keep their hands off that money. And that's the perspective I've made, and I've been told by investment advisors that I was wrong, that I shouldn't do it that way, that the Roth IRA was the right way to go. But Representative Hilty, thank you for proving me right, because that's exactly what's going to happen. You, in your arguments, you said it best. You said, I don't think it's that wrong that people who just have $10,000 pay an extra $5. And this is what we're going to be seeing happen at the federal side with the Roth IRA. But just to clarify, I want to make sure we have this for the record, that the purpose of this is to raise revenue to help the state grant program. It's not to meet the costs of or expenses of this industry, or to for the administration of these programs. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Groffel, well, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I hope maybe Representative Hilty can just clarify for me. The fees paid in are collected by the Department of Revenue, or it was, I guess I was, make sure that I was understanding what Representative Lincheski was saying.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I believe technically they're collected by the Department of Commerce, but they go on to the general fund.
Okay.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, the other point of clarification I'd like, and I don't know if somebody from the industry can talk about this, but I'd like to have a better understanding of whether these fees are passed directly to the purchasers of the funds, or whether there are other issues at play, like national rates that certain institutional players may charge that make these rates more consistent. I just want to have a better understanding of how the rate is collected and passed, or how it's ultimately passed on or not by the mutual fund sellers.
Representative Hilde.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, we did have testimony in my division about this, and actually it's somewhat conflicting with what we've been able to ascertain doing our own research. But what the testifiers testify to is that yes, this fee is passed on to the ultimate purchaser of the security. So I don't believe they have any obligation necessarily to do that, and it's somewhat conflicting with what we have been able to learn in that at least some of the issues that were pretty helpful in providing information suggested to us that the fee that they charge is the same in every state, no matter what the filing fee is, because it's such a small part of the overall brokerage fee that they don't do like an itemized list of what fees are included in the $500 or so dollar fee.
So, Representative Hilton, your answer is that there is conflicting information about whether it's passed on or whether it's just included in a kind of overall bundle fee that certain companies provide.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, it's not clear to me that it's, but to be clear, the testimony was that the fee is passed on to the consumer. It may not be revealed to the consumer what the fee is that's passed on, but it's included in the charge to the consumer.
And I guess final question is there was a discussion whether the fee is different by state, or whether I think you mentioned something about research showed that it didn't vary by state for some of the national sellers, and I'm wondering if they testified about whether there is a different rate or fee, I'm sorry, a different rate charged by these companies to the consumer across state lines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, we're not able to obtain information about every state, but I think the information that we had included 36 states, and the typical fee charged by states that have a filing fee, and I believe they all do have some kind of a charge, or most of them, not all of them, is 0.1%.
Representative Winkler, when we had the first budget balancing bill up, I requested House staff to get information on that point, and the information that we received during the conference committee was that when the sellers of those funds were contacted, they charged the same rate in every state, in spite of the fact that a few states were 0.1%, like Minnesota, out of that 36, and that 30 of the states charged the the 1/20th. There were a few states that were at 1/20th of a percent, like Minnesota, 5 or 6, and the other 30 or so states were at the 1/10th of a percent, but yet these national firms were charging the same rate in all the states. We can maybe, as this bill moves forward, continue to acquire information on that, but that's what we found out at that point in time. If that helps clarify, Representative Winkler, your question.
Mr. Chair, that is the question I'm trying to get to, I guess, and I don't know. You know, I'm hearing there is testimony saying that wasn't true. Our research shows that it is. I think it would be helpful to know what the truth is. I think it may be something like the gas tax, which is that it doesn't necessarily determine the price of gas from one state to another, even though the amount of the tax is different.
Yeah. And maybe we can continue to look into that question.
Mr. Chair, I have more detailed information that I can share with Representative Winkler and anyone who's interested.
Okay. Very good. Any further discussion? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hilty. Can you tell me, do state employees or would state employees then pay these additional fees along with the investments, or would the state pay the additional fees related to potential mutual fund purchases that we make for the various programs?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I believe that mutual funds that are part of an employee benefit plan are exempt from the filing fee. So it's not just state employees, it would be any employee benefit plan.
Representative
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty, so any private sector group that was making purchases that way would be exempt as well, or is it just state employees?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, it's my understanding that that would apply to any employee benefit plan.
Mr. Chairman.
Public or private.
Great.
Representative Broad.
And thank you, Representative Hilty, for the information. Do you know what percent of mutual funds are purchased in this individual manner versus the versus through an employee plan? I'm just trying to get a sense of what people are going to be impacted. You know, oftentimes, you know, with health insurance, self-insured plans are exempted out, and so now whenever we put a mandate in place, it only hits 29.7% of the market. I'm wondering if this fee is going to hit what percent of the actual mutual fund market. Is it small business owners, again, that will be paying this? Is it individuals out there who are just trying to save for their retirement? Do you know what percent of the people are going to be paying this additional fee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I do not, although I expect that we can look forward to hearing that information in the Tax Committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty, that's actually a great idea. I'll bring it forward there as well. I hope maybe somebody in the room can provide me with that information, or I'll be seeking it out myself. I'm just kind of curious as we put fees on, and I would say that this is not a fee anymore. It's a tax, clearly a tax, that we should make sure that people have a good understanding of how many, what percent of the population is actually going to get hit with the new tax. And so I appreciate we'll have that conversation a little bit later.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That sounds like an argument for a broad-based income tax increase instead of something like this in order to help the college students who have visited us and talked about the burden that they will bear as they prepare for their future.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make it very clear that it is not an argument for an income tax increase, Representative. I think Minnesotans pay enough. I think that we should cut our spending on the spending side of things. You can't spend more than you have, and we don't have it. So, Mr. Chairman, I am a strong opponent of increasing the business taxes on people of this state. The income tax that was just proposed by a variety of people related to income, increasing the income tax is going to increase taxes on small business owners, which I want them to keep their doors open. I don't want them to shut their doors, and so I would strongly oppose an income tax increase in this manner. Mr. Chairman, and you know, it just seems to me that if this is a priority, which, by the way, I believe that state grants are a priority, we ought to fund it as a priority and not fund it based on all sorts of other manipulations of fees and taxes throughout the state. So I think that we can find ways to fund this program if we want to, and I'm sure we'll have that opportunity on the floor.
Mr. Chairman, just to that point, I'm sorry. Over here.
Representative Groffler.
I'm sorry.
Sometimes it's hard to hear where the voice is coming from.
His voice.
Or what voice.
Yeah, exactly. Especially, my good friend Representative Broad was just speaking, and I just want to be clear. She said she is an opponent of raising business taxes. I think that perhaps when the words came out, it stated that she was a proponent of increasing business taxes, and I just want the record and the tape to reflect that she is an absolute opponent, and I know that. So.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm assuming then if the alternative to this bill is cutting the spending, that was the message of all those who would oppose this bill, that when those college students came to all of our offices over the last month, that we were all very clear to them that we are proponents of cutting their grants and will certainly in no way support
sustaining or increasing the grant funds against them or going for them. I think that's the message. I mean, if you oppose this bill, then when all those students come to visit you, since this is specifically geared for that, we need to be bold enough to say to all those students that we support cutting their grant program.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. That's what, as a practical matter, will happen if something isn't done. What's happened with the state grant program, it's not open and standing. It's a fixed appropriation. And what's happened is that, in part due to the economy, many more people have shown up on our college campuses than were anticipated. And the people that are showing up, larger numbers of them are in greater need than in the past. And what HESO was allowed to do under the law was to move dollars from the second year of the biennium to the first year to cover the cost of that increased enrollment and greater need. Historically, what has happened, or what the idea behind that was that they were then going to come in for a supplemental appropriation the second year. It's very difficult to predict how many students with need are going to show up on our college campuses. And so that's what drives the original $43 million. I think Ms. Grimes said it's down to $35 million now. So what they have to do under the law is prorate those grants if there isn't an influx of dollars one way or another. So that's why I asked the question, well, what was the average, the impact for the average student? And then on the high end, if you're attending a higher cost institution like a private college or the University of Minnesota, then you end up with an even greater amount than that average. It's my understanding that there may be some students at some of our two-year institutions that may lose a grant in its entirety. And maybe Ms. Grimes can answer that question as well. I forgot to ask that as a follow-up when you testified before, but if you're at a lower-cost institution, like, let's say, one of our community or technical colleges, is there a risk that you will receive no grant?
Mr. Chairman, there will be some students who receive no grants. Many of those would be at MNSCU two-year institutions, but some would also be students attending any kind of institution that are sort of just at the edge of eligibility. Their family income is such that they're not allowed, and the price of attendance is such that they're not eligible for a very large award. About 7,000 students in total would lose awards.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Houseman, did you have any... I just wanted to give that background so people understand what isn't happening. And by the way, it is a needs-based program. I think we all understand that. Representative Clark.
I'll pass, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wondered if Representative Lincheski would maybe help me understand the process from the Tax Committee standpoint. Do you plan to let this bill go out alone?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I haven't thought that far ahead, but... we'll see if folks in the tax committee want to keep moving or not. So not sure on that. It's not a typical tax. It's it is a fee, but it's raising significant revenue. So I think that the tax committee will have to think that through together. You, of course, serve on that. So I haven't given it a lot of thought, quite honestly.
Well, thank you, Representative Lincheski. I would be surprised if this bill moved forward, even if the tax committee likes it, if it moved forward alone, which is why, the suggestion that the link, if you vote against this bill, you're voting to cut college students, is just simply irrational, because the fact of the matter is that all these things go together, and it's really about priorities. And, if we had a reasonably priced bonding bill, we could have used those extra dollars to help fund college students. If we had, if we could get rid of the political contribution refund rather than funding politicians, we could use that money to fund college students. And so it's all combined together in how we set priorities in the state. And so when you have one bill and to suggest that they're so directly linked, when the fact of the matter is that if we wanted to find the dollars, we could find them. And I think this is a great program. I think the state grant program is a fantastic program that funds kids who need the dollars. I think it's a great program. I think we ought to actually pull some more money, maybe potentially, and create a better balance between what goes to students and what goes to institutions. You know, as we fund students, it creates greater competition. It ensures that they have the ability to get to college and go to wherever they want to go. So I think this is a great program, but it's not as directly linked as the suggestion would be made. It's really a matter of priorities, and if this is a priority, we ought to fund it in a way that doesn't increase the burden on the people who are already seeing their 401ks and their retirements take a nosedive. And so I just think this is absolutely the wrong mechanism, and we can fund it another way. And I think funding this over funding campaigns would be a better use of money, and maybe we'll have that as well down the road.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hausman, did you care to?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I came in a little late. How much was this program cut, or is it more that more students are applying and getting grants, and that's why the fund is dwindling down?
Yeah, Representative House, I just went over that. I happen to I'm ex officio on Representative Rukavina's committee, and I happened to sit in the day they were talking about the grant program, and it is an increase in the number of students, and it's also an increase in the number of students in need that is driving the shortfall. And if there are more students that need a grant than there are dollars available, then it's prorated, and that's where the term cut is coming in, because on an average, students will lose, what was it, 300 and some dollars on average. Some students, if they're attending the University of Minnesota or one of our private institutions, as much as 1,000. Some at our community and technical colleges won't get any grant at all as a result of the proration. But it is that increase.
So then, Mr. Chairman,
in students,
whether we have this bill or whether it never leaves the tax committee, we are giving more grants to more students and helping more students through college.
That's correct. And this would solve, I think Ms. Grimes said the problem is $35 million, and this bill provides $23 million. So even at this point, it doesn't totally solve the issue. Representative Clark? Where are you?
Oh, I'm right here.
Okay.
Come back. I did have a question for Representative Broad.
Perhaps I'm broad yield.
You made a big distinction between a fee and a tax. Could you just explain what the difference is?
Actually, I'm not sure that maybe I misspoke on that. I think they're actually probably both very similar. But specifically on the fee or the taxing people well beyond what the use of the dollars would be. So, for example, I suppose in statute, it used to be defined, by the way, in statute that a tax was a fee and a fee was a tax, and I think that was repealed 2 years ago, or is that still there? Well, then in that case, the statute says there's no difference.
So,
yes,
Mr.
Clark.
Thank you. Chairman, Representative Broad,
no,
so I don't know if you supported the fee on the health impact fee on tax on cigarettes?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, I voted for that legislation. Okay. It was coupled with a number of other things, but yes, I did vote for that legislation.
Do you know what the
Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you know what the fee is on a carton of cigarettes from that fee? Do you know what the cost is?
You know what, Representative Clark? Broad. I don't smoke. So I don't have the fee on the top of my fingertips or on the tip of my tongue either.
Nor do I. But the reason I'm raising it, because you're making quite a point about this difference between a fee and a tax, and you supported a fee on the cigarette tax, and I want to just say that I figured it out. I don't smoke either, but I did figure out that on a carton of cigarettes, we're talking about $9, and I would point out in this bill, we're talking about a $5 fee, I think, per 10,000, is that right? Quite a huge difference in one fee versus another, and I just thought I'd make that point.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I that's a great example of why these bills are not so clean cut. because, you know, when you have competing principles in bills, you got to make a choice. And the competing principles in the bill that raised the cigarette, quote, fee, which was determined to be a tax, were tough competing principles. And you fall down on one line because you got to vote yes and you got to vote no because you can't be fearful and vote maybe. And so the point I was making to Representative Houseman is that things are not as clear-cut as if you vote for this, you're voting to cut students, or if you don't vote for it, you're voting to cut students. It's just simply not true. It's not true. Things are not that clean cut. And so when you have all sorts of things, by the way, dumped into one bill, which is why the idea of omnibus bills is something that the Constitution wants us to be very careful of. They prefer single subject bills. It's because you can dump all sorts of things together, and then you're weighing 51%, which side am I going to fall on? Do I love everything in a bill? Do I not love everything in a bill? Healthcare bill, 1,800 pages. Are you going to love everything in a bill? Absolutely not. Do you stand with your vote? Absolutely. So my point was really more a matter of it's not as clean cut to suggest that to do one and not to do the other is you wanting to yank dollars for students. It's just not true. It's about priorities. And my question to Representative Lincheski was, if this bill was going to stand alone, if the bill was going to stand alone, then I think that argument is probably more fairly made. But these bills don't stand alone. They get chucked into and coupled with all sorts of other provisions, and so it's just simply not that neat and clean. So when you have a bill that increases a tax on in people trying to invest for their own future, pay for their own things and their own retirement down the road, to pay for college students, it's really interesting to me that you try to couple those things and make the argument. So it's not as clean cut as you want to make it. There's all sorts of ways that and things that are in bills that we make judgments, but I stand with the votes that I make, absolutely. No question about that.
Okay, I think we've got three people that want to comment, and then I think we all are fairly clear as to what the choice here is with this bill. So it's Representative Kahn, Winkler, and Huntley, if Representative Clark was done.
I'm done.
Okay. Representative Kahn.
I just wanted to respond to something that Representative Broad said about that there's no difference between a tax and a fee. That's actually some language that was an unholy cooperation between Senator Pogamiller and Representative Krinke that put that language in. And there is, and I've tried to repeal it at various times. I think we've even had it in the State Government Finance Conference Committee report, only to have the Senate Majority Leader discover it and throw a fit.
But there is
one distinctive difference, and that is that as we all know, that constitutionally any bill that contains a tax must originate in the House, and there's specific language in that definition that says that that provision does not apply to language that talks about fees. And so the sensible thing to do is either to repeal it or to repeal that distinction. So maybe we'll look at doing that in the state government finance bill this year.
Okay, and then Representative Winkler, you pass. Okay, Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, the argument over fee versus tax is an interesting one, and this is, in my mind, is definitely a tax. And the one on tobacco, tobacco smokers cost the state about $2 billion a year in health care costs. So that definitely was a fee. But I want to thank Representative Broad because I was going to vote against this. And then I started thinking about the future of the economy, and there's always talk about entrepreneurs and job creators. But they can't be entrepreneurs and they can't be job creators if you don't have a well-educated and productive workforce. And that's what this is about. It's about having a well-educated, productive workforce. Given what's happened with the economy and people losing jobs, they're doing the really smart thing. They're going to community colleges and getting their skills upgraded so when the economy turns around, they can be more productive. So I intend to vote yes. And I was originally going to vote no, but I'm voting yes now.
With that, Representative Hilty renews his motion that House File 3757 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. With that,
Mr. Chair, members, I just wanted to thank you and the committee for the opportunity to sponsor such a vigorous and wide-reaching debate.
And with that, we meet tomorrow morning at 8. We meet at tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Okay, with that, meeting is adjourned.